Today's podcast is brought to you by Gap Property Investments, helping you make your money work harder through property. If you lack time or knowledge, check out gappropertyinvestments.com. Hi guys, and welcome to episode 12 of the Breadwinners podcast. I'm your host, Pádraig Kilfordy. This business podcast looks into the lives of current entrepreneurs and business owners on how they've navigated their way, they're being the best they can be, and what makes them tick. I look into their highs, their lows of their journey, and what helpful tips they can give. This week on the podcast, I'm joined by Niamh McElhattan, who is listed by the Irish Times as one of Ireland's top five entrepreneurs. She has spent over 18 years working in digital and creative industry sector. Niamh is an official TEDx speaker, and her expertise includes the world of digital education, female empowerment, leadership, and entrepreneurship. Niamh is definitely a rock star of business here in Ireland. Let's get into episode 12 of the Breadwinners podcast.
And you're very welcome to the 12th edition of the Breadwinners podcast. I'm back from holidays, all refreshed, and no tan, unfortunately, but what can you do? Well, we've saved a great surprise for our listeners this week. We have the one and only Northern Ireland's, would I say, most famous Tyrone woman, Niamh McElhattan. Hello, how are you?
Hello, Pádraig, how are you? Delighted to be here. I don't know, I think Philomena Begley's probably Tyrone's most famous woman, no?
Well, look, it's very debatable. She does have her credentials and you have yours, obviously, you know, but would it be scarcity for me to say that you're the new Philomena Begley coming up?
I know, only after a few glasses of wine, maybe singing a few songs. Yeah. I won't torture your listeners with that right now.
No, well, look, Niamh, it's great to get you on the Breadwinners podcast, and obviously it's all about entrepreneurship, trying, failing, and getting all those cracks that some people hide about business. And obviously, you've been through a massive journey, and hands up, I know you personally, I know your story. But there's a lot of people out there that doesn't know about Niamh McElhattan. First of all, we're going to take you right back to where did you get the entrepreneurial bug, first of all?
Do you know what? I have been asked this question loads of time, and I'll be totally honest. I don't think it's something that you develop. I think it's something you're born with. And I know that you're a right little entrepreneur yourself. So would you be inclined to agree with me that it's just in you? You know, I remember, like, even going back to school. Well, I worked from I was 13. I worked lifting glasses in a hotel. I waitressed, I worked in cafes. The funniest job I had was tack ragging double-decker buses when I was 17, when I'd left school with white spirit out in Coke for, honestly, that's a true story. I thought because I did A-level art that I'd be good at masking the lines for spray paint and buses. And I blagged the guy, God bless him, for a job for the summer. And I think I sat at the top of double-decker buses high as a kite with the white spirits. But I've always worked. I try my hand at anything. And I think I always knew from a very young age that I wanted to try and have my own company and make a difference.
Look, you started out on the road very early and very young. And you were just... take us back to the time when you started that. Okay, you got those summer jobs, things like that. But where did you really cut your teeth?
Well, I'd say realistically, it was probably in London. So I left school and got a place in Trinity and studied in Trinity and realised that course wasn't for me. So I packed my bags and went to New York. And then my best friend was going to do teaching in Strawberry Hill in Twickenham. And I thought, sure, we'd be good crack over in London. Like, so I applied, did an interview and got a place. Like, talk about having the gift of the gab, and wangled my way on to a place to do teaching and absolutely hated it and left and started working for the Richmond Twickenham Times selling advertising when I was 19, and then got a job at the Polo Club. And like, you talk about an education, like that's where you cut your teeth. Like I worked for an event management company at the Polo Club, and it was, you know, relentless 14, 16 hour days setting up for events. You know, it was hard graft, but I loved it. And then I came home from London, and I remember that I wanted to set up my own event management company back then when I was about 23, and it was called Ginger Fizz Events. I had the business cards and everything. I went to
That was a very unique title, Ginger Fizz Events. It has a ring to it, Nate.
Doesn't it? I might bring it back someday. But I remember being so proud getting my little purple and orange and white business cards with Ginger Fizz Events and going to Cookstown Enterprise Centre with a business plan. And they thought this is a brilliant idea if I lived in Belfast or Dublin. So I started working, didn't really know the Northern Irish market at that stage, but worked for a business publication, worked in radio, as you know, we worked together there, worked in another startup in web development, and that's where the light came on. The whole tech scene for me was something that I realised there was huge potential in. So I started an online advertising network like 11 years ago. Danny, do you remember the first rollout of Danny?
Yeah.
Digital advertising Northern Ireland.
People thought you were mad. You were going, what? You're selling advertising on a website.
Online.
Nobody's going to buy that.
I know. Oh, poor Google. And then that failed very quickly because of the growth in the market. So the Google Display Network came into play, and that kind of wiped out our premium, low traffic brand overnight. So we diversified and went into a full service agency because we realized, as you just said there, like people wanted to have an online presence. They knew that this was something they should maybe look at, but they maybe didn't have a website or they maybe didn't have a Facebook page. So all of a sudden it's like, well, hang on, let's go back a few steps and get them to the point of being online advertising ready. So we did that. We probably bit off more than we could chew, and I lost that first business. I ended up liquidating it and going bankrupt, and my only salvage at the time then was because Northern Ireland wasn't big enough for me, I had a client in Dubai. So this is a totally random story, but this is the truth. So at the said polo club that I mentioned earlier that I worked at, my best friend that I followed to Strawberry Hill to teach in college with was celebrating her hen weekend. So we were reliving our youth in Richmond, and we booked Sunday lunch at the polo club that I had worked at, fell into a load of old friends that I hadn't seen in a decade, and we're chatting away, and I was telling them what I was doing, and you know, this is the training that we're doing. We're getting people ready for this new internet age. And one of the guys said, you know, maybe you should come out to the Middle East and deliver training for our business. And I was like, okay, well, sure, let's explore that. So I did some training for them in London. They had an office there. And then they were moving all their operation out to the Middle East. So I went out to the Middle East to do the training with them. And I ended up traveling back and forth every month to Dubai for 5 years. And merged my business out there with another company that's absolutely probably one of the top five agencies in the Middle East now. So we did that. It was quite a journey. So that kind of got me to the point of understanding where, you know, and the importance of innovation technology and how important it is for business to have an online presence.
That happened there in a couple of years, but take me back. To the whole bankruptcy there, and suppose that's something that people are very shy to actually to admit, you know. What was going through the head back then, Niamh?
Well, there was a lot. I was going through a separation as well, so that was wonderful. I call it my trilogy. So I liquidated the business, was made bankrupt, and separated at the same time. And you know, looking back on it now, it was horrendous. I mean, I tell this story as well, actually. So we made the decision that the company wasn't going to go any further. So it was up to us to sort it out. When we started the liquidating process, we had taken a loan maybe 4 years prior to that. And Big Girl here had signed a personal guarantee on it. Like, 4 years prior to that, I'd have signed my right arm. I wouldn't even have known I was signing my right arm away. And that came back to bite me on the bum, and the personal guarantee that I had signed was actually the thing that was made me bankrupt. So at the time, I remember thinking, I have put so much energy, so much love, so much sacrifice, blood, sweat and tears into this for absolutely nothing. And when we were going through the process, I was sitting in my solicitor's office, and I just remember thinking, how the hell am I going to come back from this? Like, actually, you know, nobody will want to employ me. I'm an absolute failure. I failed at everything I've put my hand to. It was shit. It really was. And menthol cigarettes and Sauvignon Blanc were like my best friends for like a few months, because I just couldn't get my head around how the hell I was going to pick myself back up again. Everything, like my marriage had gone, I had two little girls, and it was just, you know, it was really shit, actually. So I had a couple of moments where I did feel very sorry for myself, but not to be defeated, you know. I still had work in Dubai. I got work lecturing in the college here locally on digital marketing when I was home. So I could lecture for 3 weeks at home and then go and do my thing in the Middle East for a week every month. And then that kind of got my mojo back a bit. And the girls, like my girls are my world, like they're your total inspiration. And I thought, catch yourself on, the pity party's over, you know, build yourself back up here again, do what you're good at. So that took a while. And I'd say probably for a year, I just kept my head down, kept working, trying to make a living. Like, I sold my car and bought a 12-year-old Golf so that I could afford to pay the mortgage and, you know, keep things ticking over. It took a wee while to kind of regain confidence and get over the fact that failure, that it's brilliant. It's failure's not a tattoo. It's only a bruise, you know. It's only a moment. And I am at the point now where it's probably the best thing that I've ever come through, because now I have a very broad understanding of managing finances, which I didn't have before. I was completely frivolous, probably, and just didn't really appreciate the value of money. And now I have to say I run things like, I run a very tight ship. I have no credit cards. I have no overdraft facility. Like, I run everything in the black now, whereas before it had been just like, should we just put it on the credit card? It'll be grand. So I was very naive back then. So for me, it's been a massive learning, but a very beneficial one. Am I glad that it happened? No, but having come through it, it's definitely been a massive learning for me.
And tell me, you said it like a bruise, but more like a dead arm. You're just waiting to wake up and get on with things.
Yeah. Like, you can, you know, I think that's one of the things that I've learned. Like, I've become very resilient, you know, over the last 4 to 5 years, especially, you know. I got really sick in Dubai, actually, in December 2017. I got a lovely E. coli from eating sushi and was hospitalised, and it was quite grim. And, you know, you have one of those moments where you question your whole life existence. What am I doing with my life? What's the point? You know, the fear of never seeing your kids, all that nonsense that goes through your head. And I did a resilience course after that. Actually, it was before that, but I never really applied the learnings to it. And I think rather than dwell on anxieties and fear, you have to acknowledge them. These things happen. But it's up to us as individuals to learn from them and move on in a positive, as opposed to letting it totally ruin things for you moving forward.
But during that time, suppose it was tough. But obviously, the little hamster in the wheel there decided to keep going, keep fighting, keep at it. You know, when you decided to make that shift, tell us about that.
Well, I suppose for me, like, I am not going to lie, I like the finer things in life, always have.
And we've seen you got a new car during the week. Yeah, you know, you're throwing out the pity party there to us, and everybody.
Can I caveat that with, I agreed to let that go on Facebook to help the guy with a bit of crack. I did not know that was going on LinkedIn. I was mortified. I was like, oh my God. But anyway, sure, listen, helps to drive and all that. No, I don't do poor me. I don't do victims. I totally accept responsibility for my actions. I've put my hand up and said, yes, I have messed up on all levels. I am sorry. But moving forward, how do we make this work? So when I got back from Dubai after being sick, I kind of realised that I never wanted to hear the Emirates theme tune ever again in my head, because it was just such a grim experience. So again, you know, just when things were beginning to pick up for me after everything falling to bits in 2014, here I was at the start of 2018 trying to reevaluate everything again. So for me, it was always innovation. It was always tech for good. It's always looking at how digital can improve the way we connect with each other, you know, in a positive way. It was very much about how technology can come into a business to make it more efficient, to make it more productive, to make life easier. And for me, that's when I started Smart Global. It was all about educating people. So I knew that I was on to something with that business as well. And it did really well in Northern Ireland, but it's a very small pool. And when you start, you know, I created the Danny Awards 10 years ago. We'll celebrate that next year. You know, and it was a first to market as well. And it was a brilliant event and recognised something that was, you know, starting to bloom. So for me, I get very excited about the startup phase. You know, I get very excited about opportunities. Not all opportunities will work. In fact, you need about 10 deadly opportunities for one to even work. And no, I just seen Smart as a really good opportunity. But people are always on the back, you know, on your ankles, biting at you. So when you come up with a deadly idea, you can guarantee the next day or the next week, somebody's out there replicating it. And I suppose my problem, looking back, I am an ideas box. Like, I just think about things you could do all the time if you had the resource and money. And I suppose I never really had enough cash or resource behind me to really drive those things to the next level. And I've been to the M&A stage quite, like, this maybe the third time. And one worked, you know, one failed and one kind of didn't go through. So you learn as well. I think as I've got older through this journey, like, I'm always going to be an eternal optimist. Always. Like, even the realist that's here on my left shoulder saying, now be patient, you know, don't get too excited, take your time. There's always the wee voice in the right hand saying, no, get excited, go for it, you know. And as I get older, it's about getting that balance and not rushing things. And things never go as fast as you anticipate them to. So I think for me, you know, when the opportunity came up with my current job, I knew that the time was right. So I'm getting married next year again. I have 5 kids to see to. We have a beautiful new home. So my priorities changed. You know, I wasn't a single mama too. We were now a big family unit. So when you have other people depending on you, your priorities do change and you do grow up a bit. So that's kind of where we're at the moment.
And you say that with your golfing hat on you as well, I may add.
Listen, yeah. Don't you throw me in it anymore, Hilferty, right?
Come on, you agreed to the interview, so I can't actually let you pass, you know. So, you know, that's the entrepreneurial side coming out there at all stages, at the seams. But you need that passion. You need that drive. And I suppose I would come from that camp as well at certain stages. I would be very good at ideas, but maybe sometimes I wouldn't be good at the old paperwork on the right-hand side as well. It's fun to actually get something going, but it's great to have an idea. But if you don't do anything with it,
yeah, you don't go anywhere. I would speak a lot with women in business, and obviously I have the She Said Club podcast as well, which is all about female empowerment, not to be sexist, sorry, guys. But, you know, we women do need a wee bit more encouragement. We do need a bit more support. And listen, I fully appreciate men suffer from imposter syndrome and have the same anxieties and fears and so on. But for me, I just know that I'm there, whatever I do, it's to help people. It's to benefit people. And that's very much where my line of thought is at the minute. Like, so in my current job, I help businesses get the right people, and I help people get a better job so that they can have a better lifestyle. So we're here for a short time, not a long time. And I don't know about you, but the older you get, the more you realise that. And I'm a big fan of live and let live. And if I can support and help anybody in anything, any walk of life, like I even get messages still on LinkedIn or on Instagram or whatever, asking for a bit of advice, I'll always help somebody. Even if I can't do it directly, I'll always point them in the right direction. I remember starting out and me asking people for advice. And you know what? People weren't that free with it. You know, people were quite dismissive. And I thought, you know what? When I make it, even if some graduate comes out of university and asks me a question, I'm going to answer it. And if I can't answer it, I'm going to put them in contact with somebody that can. Because I think we're all in this journey together. And why make life more difficult for each other, you know?
And is that something you see changing quite a lot? Suppose in society now, through the digital age, and I think, you know, there's just such an instant response, starts a new idea or gets, you know, socially, people are starting to come on to video and they're getting criticised and dealing with that too. There's a lot of that as well, Niamh.
I think, like, let's be honest, right? There's a lot of bullshit out there online at the minute, right? So the one thing that I think is lost in the last, especially 3 years, is authenticity. So there's an amazing group of people that I'm friends with on Instagram, for example. And, you know, my fear for people that drive Instagram as their business model is that there's always a new kid on the block. You can only be innovative for so long unless you're totally authentic and doing something that really helps and supports people or drives something really different will you survive, because it's ruthless out there. Like my biggest fear for my kids is flipping online trolling. You know, that bullying, that cyberbullying, like Snapchat, you know, all of that stuff that we don't see. It's different in the playground where you could see kids go over and wallop each other and you knew that's what they were doing. But it's, you know, all that silent, the quiet words, the messages that disappear, you know, all of that. For me, I hate trolls. I hate people who spend their time as a keyboard warrior writing just horrible things unnecessarily about people that they don't have to, and they wouldn't have the balls to say it to their face. So for me, it goes back to the whole thing of tech for good. You know, be kind. Like, we've seen so many sad stories over the last 24 months, like poor Caroline Flack being one, other Love Island stars taking their own life, you know, when their life's only beginning. So for me, there's a lot of work to be done around protecting each other. And there's also a lot of work done around educating each other. And I think that's where the line has to be drawn, because people are so deluded now, you know. There's girls on Instagram that I'm friendly with that I would send messages with, because we maybe, you know, have teenage daughters. We maybe have the same like of a restaurant. Say, oh, what did you have? Or what was the menu this week? Well, that was really lovely. And we have a lot of in common. But there's then that fanatical side where people follow people that they don't know, that they'll never meet, but they think they're friends. And it's like the real world and the virtual world. And it's like, guys, you know, yous aren't friends. Yous have never met, you know, and that's my fear, is where do you draw the line? Because people are so deluded between what's real and what's the virtual world. And for me, you know, I remember, like, how old I sound. I remember I used to be like really cool and young entrepreneur, and I'm sounding like this old Betty that's been around the block. But I remember, do you remember a world without Facebook, Park?
I do, yeah.
You're older than me, don't you do?
I'm not older than you, actually. No,
you are. What age are you? What age are you?
I'm 39.
Hey, when are you 40?
Doesn't matter here, look.
Yeah, you're older than me.
You are. You're not buddy. No, I actually do. I remember working on the radio, and it was just starting to come in then. You know, yeah. I thought it was great because people could text you. It was a great, you know, it was a great thing to be able to do, to connect with listeners and connect with people through social media. They do hear you on the radio, and you used to be fascinated about things like that, trying to get in contact with people, because you only could text. This is all you could do back then, send a text. Emails were coming in, at that stage, all right. But all this new social, like WhatsApp and things like that, you know.
Yeah, I'm just laughing. I'm reminiscing about a story with Malachy Kirsch in the radio station. Malachy wouldn't have been too happy with emails or texts. Oh, no. But yeah, so that's what I mean. You know, we are very lucky in the fact that we have embraced this, but we knew a world without it. So we're not totally immersed and deluded by the value that they think that these social channels, you know, bring to their life. You know, I would advise people to actually take a detox. You know, I don't know about you, right? And maybe I'm going to get a lot of backlash for this when I say this, right? But when I was a teenager and in my 20s, there was no such thing as depression or anxiety. No, I mean, there was, but it wasn't this heightened, in your face, daily, day in, day out. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I think if it's such a rife thing going through young people's lives right now, they need to identify what's causing that anxiety and that fear and that feeling of worthlessness. So if it is social media, surely then they have to take control of that and hit the mute button and take time away from it. And I think for me, you know, whilst I am a massive advocate for digital, for technology, for innovation, it's all for, you know, for good. And my fear at the moment is that there's so much negativity out there. It's actually so sad to watch, you know. And for me, if we as human race don't embrace, you know, the reality of this situation, it's only actually going to get worse.
Yeah, definitely is a massive issue now at the minute as well. And suppose you touched on it, advice to brands and the businesses and to you know, individuals, authenticity is the way forward.
100%. I remember, right, this will give you a laugh. I remember getting a contract with, so when I first started out, there was a girl who I was in absolute awe of. She was so slick. She came home from London. She was on top of her game. She knew everything about e-commerce. I mean, she was just, I was like, wow, she's incredible. She was so polished. She was so professional. Where I always felt like, just maybe I was always giddy, you know, I was always kind of cracking with people, and you know, I was never going in serious. So I remember this one particular piece of business I'd won, and I was going to meet the board. Well, I was going to meet the chairman and a couple of the business development directors, and I was going in very conservative, even dressed conservatively, like no wild colors. It wasn't black, and it was an introduction actually that an Invest in I client had given, and it was great lead that actually turned out to a nice piece of work. But I remember going in and being ever so polite and trying to be very serious and very professional. And as we went around the table of introductions, they were saying who they were and what they were doing. Now, you know, Niamh, tell us a bit about yourself. And so I started the Irish spiel, and the next thing the CEO of the company says, well, Niamh, said person at Invest in I said you're an absolute lunatic, but you're really good at your job. And I started to laugh, and I said, oh, I actually remember saying, he is such a silly Billy for saying that. Like, I don't even know where silly Billy came from. Yeah. And I just remember after that meeting, you know what, Niamh, you can actually be nobody but yourself. And I think that's the big thing. It's like, just be yourself, be nice, work hard. If it doesn't work, let it go. Don't dwell on it. You know, and in business especially, you know, I really thought that my life was a failure. I thought everything I did was shit. It was a complete failure. It wasn't going to work. But actually, you know what? That's nonsense. You have to switch your mindset. You have to give yourself credit and allow yourself time to heal, because it does hurt. But pick yourself. That's only a moment. That's not your life, you know.
And is that something, suppose, entrepreneurs or people who are self-employed or even in sales, they don't step back and say, well, look, what have I achieved here? It's you know, I've achieved a lot, you know, and I haven't really took time out to look at that and to say, yeah, that has been quite successful. And that's, suppose, is that an Irish thing, or you'll get that more here, I think, from an Irish point of view.
It probably is. Like, I can stand up now, you know, when I look back at all my failures, they were massive learnings, which have turned into massive positives since. Like, the Irish Times voted me one of their top 5 entrepreneurs last year. I was the top 40 under 40 for a couple of years in a row. I got through in competitions. You know, I've delivered a TED talk. You know, I have 2 kids. You know, I've had massive achievements in my life. And you never stop and think, wow, holy, you know, like, that's amazing. Like, I did that. Nobody did that for me, you know. And when I look back in the whole business journey, like, it was me that had the tenacity to go to Dubai to open doors for new opportunities for business growth. It was me that took the reins to, you know, call it a day when it was over and we knew there was no coming back. It was me that decided to get up and go again. You know, so you have to take that responsibility yourself, but you have to allow yourself to say, fair play to you. And I haven't done that for a long time. Was it probably about 2 years ago where I finally, you know, kind of give myself a pat on the back for the first time, you know, for having the balls to go and try to do something, as opposed to sit and think, oh, I'd love to do that, to go and do it. You know, that's my advice to everybody. If you have a brilliant idea, if you have this burning urge and desire to give something a go, oh my God, go and give it a go. Don't just sit and in 20 years from now, when you're in the same boring job for 20 years, wondering what the hell you did with your life and full of regret. You know, try it. You know, and people say, oh, it's not that easy. People will come up with every level of excuse. I could come up with every level of excuse too, but I don't. And that's the thing I would say for people. If they, you know, if they're a brilliant artist, but, you know, they're kind of a prisoner to their salary, you know, think about other ways in which you can actually play it out. You know, the reality is too, I work long hours. You know, I work at weekends. You know, there is no static 9 to 5 anymore. And people have to shift in that mindset as well. Like, if you think you're going to be an entrepreneur and, you know, only work all, you know, 9 to 4, good luck, you know, because that's not the reality. You do work smarter, but definitely it's if you're a 9 to 5 mentality, stick with it. But if you're not and you have a desire to do something, then you have to go for it.
Pulling back on the digital side of it, Niamh, and suppose now since COVID-19 has hit the world, and it has really helped a lot of online platforms, a lot of online stores. They've seen their sales absolutely shoot through the roof. Is COVID the biggest positive for digital media over the last 10 years?
I can't believe it's taken us long in this conversation to bring COVID into the chat.
I know, so, it's boring, but look, I had to try and find... Look, you were chatting about yourself there for about half an hour, so I had to listen to that.
Well, I've listened to you for long enough over the years. No, you're such a wee guest. So for me, right, okay, when this all started, so there's obviously two sides to this, right? So absolutely for e-commerce, online, you know, retail, all of that, fabulous. Even, you know, for telemedicine, for, you know, the other services that have had to diversify online, you know, it's been very progressive and I think we've all adapted very quickly. However, that's just one side of the pie. I have bought the most random stuff off Amazon, right?
Damn,
I bought
yeah.
a pump for my bicycle. I bought light bulbs that don't even work. I bought like hair bands. I bought dusters, Hoover bags. I bought, like, I genuinely went through this phase of just buying absolute trash on Amazon. And you think, wow, you know, so handy, it's so quick, it's so efficient. However, there's Joe Bloggs down the street with his vegetable store who doesn't have an online platform, who wouldn't probably be too digitally savvy to go on Facebook. And that man is the man that needs our love more than anyone else right now. I think Jeff from Amazon is doing all right. I think he's going to be okay for cash for the next wee while. So for me, whilst I would love to be a shareholder of Zoom right now, even 1%, even one share in Zoom,
I'm quite happy with.
I think it has been, you know, transformative for a lot of those businesses that were, you know, plodding along, trying to make it absolutely online. And, you know, hats off. People have adapted and been very agile and have, you know, invested time in the right way to drive their online business. But I think we need to be very, you know, considerate for local businesses that, you know, the whole shop local. I think that they're the guys that we need to support. So we have a fabulous wee store at the road from us. It's not a Tesco. It's not a big supermarket. It's a small store. And that's where we've decided to do our groceries because we're supporting local trade. It'd be as handy for me to sit here whilst working and do my online groceries, but that's not going to help, you know, local businesses. So for me, whilst, yes, there is a lot of, I always see, you know, opportunity in a time of crisis for sure. But for me, the big fear factor I have now is that Northern Ireland, like 85% of business is made out of SMEs, you know, that may be strapped on cash. Once furlough's over, how do those businesses pick up again? How do they pay staff? You know, they're snookered. There's going to be massive unemployment. There's going to be lots of people out of work. That, you know, and I said from the start of this, you know, and I spoke quite vocally about it, that if you know that your job is in danger, you know, in like, well, if you reverse back to March and we're now coming into August, you know, in March, April, you should have been upskilling, reskilling, looking at new opportunities, thinking of new ideas so that you're not sitting here going, oh goodness, am I redundant? I didn't think that would happen. You know, and I think that's the thing that concerns me the most. Whilst huge opportunity, as a local economy, it's going to be a trying few months when this is all over.
Yeah, but there is opportunity, and we've obviously come through stuff before that we can come through again. It's going to be a challenge, and look, I think if we go in with a positive mindset and the business mindset that we're going to get through it, I think that's the only way to start looking at it, because the media will drive agendas, and agendas will drive a lot of things. But one thing that you can drive, as you touched on, is local employment, is looking after the local employment as well, Niamh.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, as well as that, you know, if you had said like 10 years ago, you know, online is going to take over our local paper, our daily paper, you'd have like no chance, like advertising online, you know, stuff, you know. And now imagine saying that you're going to advertise in a paper. Like, it's funny how everything kind of evolves, and COVID will be kind of another step in evolution. You know, we've diversified, our way of thinking has changed. We never thought that when we booked our flights to our summer holidays in January that we wouldn't be going on a plane. You know, all the things we took for granted. So, you know, for me now, it's about protecting everybody in my bubble. So making sure that, you know, we do our groceries with that local store, that we can support local businesses wherever possible. But it's also really vitally important locally to support people who do have to change and pivot in their job and their career. And maybe for those people who find themselves out of work, maybe that will put fire in their belly for them to actually start the business they wanted to start, but they didn't have the guts to go and do it, you know?
And suppose you're chatting for an hour or so now, before I let you go.
Have we actually talked for an hour?
Yeah, we're up on an hour now, so you've covered a lot of stuff. An hour of talking, but no, it's been good. It's been entertaining, and our listeners will get a lot out of it, because Niamh, you've come through the highs and the lows of business and a long career so far, and obviously, you've seen things that probably, you know, people starting out that hasn't seen. And what I try and do with the podcast is I try and give as much back as I possibly can. What three things would you suggest to someone who's maybe, you know, in business, or maybe thinking about getting into business, or even, look, in a job at the minute, you know, as well? Because I think if you have a job, you're in business as well, so you have to you have to protect that as well.
Well, take it for the sake of entrepreneurship, okay, and for the sake of maybe wanting to start your own business. My pearls of wisdom would be to make sure you have enough cash in the bank to pay for your mortgage and your rent. Just make sure you have, you know, a few months' salary tucked away to keep you safe, or to get some financial backing just to give you a bit of security, because having that wee bit of security gives you confidence. That would be my first thing. The second thing, if you are not fully committed to your project, if you don't get up in the morning and look forward to the day, you're not doing it right. And I can genuinely say, and I mean this hand in heart, and I get up in the morning and I'm like, right, what's going to happen today? Like, genuinely, I love getting up in the morning. I have a little routine with my coffee. I am excited. I know that there'll be a challenge, that there'll be something good out of the day. So if what you're doing doesn't excite you and you're not happy in the morning, then it's time to change. I have so many friends that like hate their job and like I just can't be bothered. And I'm like, well, why are you doing it then? Oh, it's easy for you. No, it's not easy for me. If you're not happy doing what you do, change it. And the third thing I would say, never sign a personal guarantee.
it's a given.
Yeah, but no, just listen. I just think just go for it. And I know it goes back to that old motto from that program with Invest in I, but you've nothing to lose. And I'm just a very big believer that if you have an idea, if you want to try it, just go for it. Just try it and see. If it doesn't work, big deal. At least you tried.
Niamh McElhattan, thank you very much for joining us on the 12th edition of the Breadwinners podcast. It's been a roller coaster ride. I never thought it would be anything different, but look, Niamh, thanks very much for chatting to us.
You're more than welcome, Padraig. Thanks for having me.
I hope today's podcast was useful. Please tag me over on our Facebook page. From myself, Padraig Kilfordy, and the Breadwinner podcast team, we will talk to you in next month's series. Today's podcast is brought to you by Gap Property Investments, helping you make your money work harder through property. If you lack time or knowledge, check out gapropertyinvestments.com.